All right, conference call with Kyle Shanahan just wrapped up. Next steps with Devondre Campbell, who deserted the team yesterday when the 49ers needed him with their season on the line. Shanahan said that the 49ers are working through semantics. He also said that there is no place for Devondre Campbell on their football team. So the semantics, that means that either release or suspension is possible for Devondre Campbell. An outright release, though, would give him a chance to sign with another team. And although the chances of another team wanting to take a flyer on Devondre Campbell have significantly lowered since he literally walked off the field on the 49ers yesterday, that's still a big risk for San Francisco. Somebody like Detroit has four injured linebackers and is a Super Bowl contender, might be interested in signing Devondre Campbell if the 49ers were to release him. And that'd be a really, really brutal look for the 49ers if Campbell went to the Lions, won an NFC championship, won a Super Bowl, stayed in line with the Lions after the ugly incident last night. So I can see why the 49ers are weighing different options in this situation. That release could potentially be even more damaging than the situation has already been to the 49ers, and a suspension for conduct detrimental to the team or something of that sort might be preferable to the 49ers. They have the duty of, A, sending a message to preserve their team culture, right? And B, doing so in a way that discourages any sort of similar behavior in the future. So how they handle this Devondre Campbell situation from the semantic perspective is actually going to be really, really interesting moving forward. Kyle Shanahan's exact quote on the matter today was, quote, "not something you can do and still be part of our team," end quote. And then he did mention that they're working through the semantics. So release or suspension. And as I just said, because a release would put the 49ers in a position of looking even worse if Devondre Campbell successfully signs and performs elsewhere, I think maybe that suspension may be what the 49ers trend toward. Although I don't know. That's all that Kyle Shanahan said. Right now I'm speculating about potential outcomes. I can tell you about Devondre Campbell's contract. He's got a veteran minimum $1.21 million base salary. For a vested veteran, that amount is guaranteed. However, Devondre Campbell broke the contract by refusing to play. There are clauses in these contracts that say if you refuse to play, the team can recoup some of those guarantees. And they're paid on a game-by-game basis. So 1/17th or 1/18th of the contract is owed each week. And I think that the 49ers would definitely have the ability to not pay Devondre Campbell for this week. And then obviously for the next 3 weeks, I think they probably have legal standing there if he is suspended. Now that's where semantics come in, because this could turn into a little bit of a legal fight, but that's the base salary is $1.21 million. Devondre Campbell signed a $3.35 million signing bonus. Signing bonus, as is implied, goes directly into the bank account after a player puts pen to paper. There are ways for teams to try to recoup part of signing bonuses. That could also be under the umbrella of semantics that Kyle Shanahan was talking about. And then Devondre Campbell has $20,000 of per game roster bonus money. So every single time that he's on the active roster, he's owed $20,000. He was on the active roster yesterday, so technically owed $20,000. He's not going to be on active rosters for the 49ers moving forward over the final three games of this season, so that's at least $60,000 that the 49ers won't, in all certainty, have to pay Devondre Campbell. But I do wonder what the rest of this is going to be. You know, the $1.21 million base salary, the prorated portion of that, do the 49ers successfully recoup that? Do they try to? And the signing bonus, do they try to go after some of that? It's all going to be fascinating to see how San Francisco approaches this situation. Shanahan, all he said right now is that they're working through the semantics. We're not even sure if they're going to release Devondre Campbell or if they're going to suspend him. But again, a release, although Campbell would have to clear waivers because every player after the trade deadline when he's released, even if he's a vested veteran, has to clear waivers, it would still give Devondre Campbell a chance to play elsewhere. And potentially, if he did clear waivers, a chance to sign where he wanted. And I'm not sure if the 49ers want to give him that option. Shanahan today said that he has not been in touch at all with Devondre Campbell. I mentioned yesterday, I walked into the locker room. His stuff was still in his locker, but he was obviously gone. So we didn't hear from Devondre Campbell. We heard from his teammates, who were angrier than I'd ever seen. I wrote about it up on the San Francisco Standard. This is the article. I'm just going to take you through the first couple graphs. Because George Kittle put it most eloquently. He was up there at the podium talking about this. I said, George Kittle is just one of two 49ers players who's been with the team since 2017, Kyle Shanahan's first year as coach. He's spoken to the media hundreds of times in the 8 seasons since, which have featured more peaks of exhilaration and valleys of devastation than many works of dramatized fiction. Not once during any of his press conferences at the Levi Stadium Auditorium or media scrums in crowded locker rooms has Kittle broadcast clear anger. He'd inevitably shown hints of sadness during a run that has included 2 Super Bowl losses, a pair of NFC title game defeats, and this torturous string of 2024 losses. But anger? That had simply not been an emotion the outside world could associate with Kittle, a superstar known for his jovial disposition and avoidance of bad days. Thursday night, though, made it impossible for Kittle and the 49ers to escape unrestrained negativity. Kittle said, "It's one person who just decided not to play for his teammates. It's more of one person, as Charvarius Ward said, making a selfish decision. And I'm with Mooney on that. I've never been around anybody that's ever done that, and I hope I'm never around anybody that does that again. I don't like distractions on the sideline. I think that's ignorant. I think it's just dumb, just stupid. It's very immature. I just don't see how you can do something like that to your team," end quote. So the 49ers trying to preserve their culture. Kyle Shanahan was still upset about it on the conference call this morning. He was completely incensed yesterday. And how the 49ers handle this is going to be fascinating. They've got to rebuild the team, obviously. That was always going to have to happen this offseason. There were going to be key decisions. Yes, Brock Purdy is still going to get paid a big contract. That hadn't changed despite one bad game. We'll wade into that in a little bit. But the restructuring of the entire 49ers roster, that's something that happens every offseason. It's the NFL. Nothing lasts for a long time in the NFL. Even in years where the 49ers have brought back the entire core, there have been a lot of changes to the auxiliary parts of the roster. But that is slated to happen in the coming months. 49ers need to set the table for that. And we've already been talking about that for a few weeks, really ever since they lost that game to Seattle, and then Brock Purdy wasn't available to go in Green Bay, and the playoff chances really dwindled for the 49ers. So the end of this 2024 season has to set an auspicious tone for the 2025 offseason. And that is not possible unless you correctly handle this Devondre Campbell situation. And that's what the 49ers are working on right now through semantics. And we'll see if that means a release or if that means a suspension with Campbell still technically, I guess, not on the roster if he's suspended, but he's still technically under the umbrella of the 49ers building. Other part of the update from today is that Dre Greenlaw came out okay from yesterday's game. And this is a big situation here that we need to zoom out. And I think credit Nick Sorensen for, credit Dre Greenlaw for. I mean, and Nick Bosa was back again yesterday. Bosa and Greenlaw were back. Hufanga returned the week before. The 49ers defense looked really damn good yesterday. Yes, they started to let up some yardage toward the end, but this was an offensive failure and also a Devondre Campbell failure because he walked out on the defense. And I think when they needed some linebacker depth late with Dre Greenlaw, you know, on the sore knee, that Dre Greenlaw just sore yesterday and the 49ers didn't want to push it any further. When they needed some linebacker depth, Devondre Campbell wasn't there for them, but the defense still didn't give up a touchdown to the Rams. The pass rush looked explosive. Yetur Gross-Matos, NFC Defensive Player of the Week, last week against the Chicago Bears, joined by Bosa, who looked healthy. I mean, 49ers were balling on defense. Dre Greenlaw, 8 tackles, led all players at halftime. This was a blueprint that they can follow for success moving forward. So Nick Sorensen had horses in this game. He had his guys back, and he looked a whole lot better than he did earlier this season. Now, I'm not saying that this was perfect from Nick Sorensen. I thought there were some fruitless blitzes that the 49ers sent the Rams' way. But I don't think anybody was ever arguing that Nick Sorensen was a top-tier defensive coordinator. I think that the fact that he was a new defensive coordinator was truly exposed when the 49ers didn't have their talent on hand, because he struggled to manufacture pressure through blitzes, and he struggled to manufacture disguises when he didn't have the players to execute the communication as needed to be executed, like Talanoa Hufanga. So maybe the 49ers could have benefited from a more experienced defensive coordinator when they were so injured. But the hope was that they were going to be decently healthy throughout the season so that Sorensen could learn on the job. And yesterday was a big arrow up in that direction for Nick Sorensen and company. The defense really did look good for the vast majority of this game. And it was only when they were overexposed, thanks to the 49ers offense not rebutting at all to the Rams' long march, that 17-play march, it was only when that overexposure happened that the 49ers defense truly looked like it was languishing. That's when that long pass from Matthew Stafford to Puka Nacua happened at the end of the game. I will say, though, that the dropped interceptions at the start of this game, and it's tough to blame Talanoa Hufanga because he's playing with a club on his hand, and then you juxtapose that with a healthy Devondre Campbell walking off the field, but Hufanga couldn't hold on to a pick with that club on his hand, and Diamante Lenore couldn't hold on to a fastball from Matthew Stafford that could have been a pick six the other way. It's just wild to me that you pick off one of those passes if you're the 49ers and the entire narrative surrounding the offense changes. And you know, that's a fundamental flaw of football analysis. I wrote this up on X a little bit ago. The process of football analysis is just, it's results oriented to a major flaw. It needs to be a little bit more process oriented. We need to focus on the things that went wrong, even when the final outcome was a good one for the team. And we need to focus on the things that went right, even when the final outcome was bad for a team. Because one game samples, if you're just looking at the result of the one game, are just going to lead you back and forth. They're going to lead you to nowhere on a weekly basis. You're going to be happy with a win and you're going to be pissed off with a loss. It's going to vacillate back and forth. That's what we're seeing with this Brock Purdy discourse. Step back and look at the big picture and try to do it every week. But if it's too hard to do every week and the emotions of the moment, step back and look at the aggregate statistics and the aggregate performance. And for Brock Purdy, it was number one QBR ceiling. We saw that last year, and now he's down to number 9 after a really bad game yesterday. That's the big picture of things. And I think that it is maddening to get on the internet right now and see the lack of perspective. Everybody is staring at the big tree that is defeat without seeing the larger forest. So that's how the 49ers have to proceed strategically. They absolutely have to zoom out and they have to see the forest. A couple more injury updates before we get into a little bit more of that talk. Dre Greenlaw, okay from the game. Jair Brown, groin injury, and D. Winter's neck are both day to day. As I do shift toward the big picture, the 49ers defense did look good yesterday. The offense was absolutely atrocious. And to me, that's something that offensive structure and big time cracks in that offensive structure did not just appear last night. It's something I've been talking about all season. 49ers have tumbled from number 1 to number 32 in yak, from number 11 to number 32 in average separation. I've talked about Kyle Shanahan and the struggles of his play calling for the whole season. I think that the 49ers have set things up really unsustainably. When they've been successful, they've relied on Superman plays from Brock Purdy way too often. There hasn't been the ease and the flow of the offense really outside of the game against Chicago. Even when they put up 36 points against the Seahawks in week six, it took some absolutely spectacular Brock Purdy plays to get them there. Against Chicago, there was finally some ease and flow to the offense, but just 4 days later, that completely disappeared. So those are the big picture problems. And to be honest, they might be a little scarier to 49ers fans. A lot of fans want to simplify things and say, oh, the quarterback is terrible. That was a bad game, and you know that this is a dead end. They should just go sign somebody else. They should start the backup. They should go to Josh Dobbs. So whatever fans are saying, it might make them feel better to just point fingers in one spot, which is why a QB typically gets the brunt of the blame after a loss. But as I've been trying to hammer home every single week, the 49ers have been structurally unsound as an entire offense over the whole season. And that obviously starts with Kyle Shanahan because he's the play caller. He's the head coach. But we see the stylistic differences. They're unfathomable. Like, the changes have been unfathomable from year to year. One to number 32 in yak. 11 to number 32 in separation. I mean, these are crazy, crazy changes that we've seen. And to me, that's even more alarming than just saying, oh, this player had a bad game. That's trouble for the 49ers. Because one bad game doesn't define anybody really in the entire NFL. Like, everybody's going to have a struggle in a game. Everybody's going to have a great game. I mean, this is the league. These are the best players in the world. It's really, really important to see larger picture trends. And that's why I've been hammering home the struggles of the 49ers offense. I think I remember in week two after the game in Minnesota, I was talking about the separation issues, talking about some of the yak issues already in week three, week four, when it became very apparent that the 49ers were not playing with the same style as before. Well, now it's led them all the way to the brink of playoff elimination. I think they've got less than a 1% chance at this point to make the postseason. This is what I wrote. Too much football analysis is results dependent. It should be process dependent too. If the 49ers catch Matthew Stafford's interception, or if Deebo Samuel catches Brock Purdy's would-be touchdown pass, we likely wouldn't be seeing this mass condemnation of Purdy or Shanahan's offense, even though there'd be plenty to criticize. Conversely, good offensive games like the 49ers' performance against Chicago shouldn't mask the season-long yak and separation deficiencies that the 49ers have faced. That's why we strive to operate with larger sample sizes to make evaluations and resist the temptations of single knee-jerk reactions. Simple as that. We have to look at larger trends, and then we could see individual problems within single games and see how they fit with those larger trends. And the one that I found the most alarming yesterday and the most damaging for the 49ers yesterday was the force feeding of Deebo Samuel. This is from a coach, not a 49ers coach, but a coach that I really respect, who's a good offensive mind. And I asked him about the Deebo Samuel force feeding. This is what he texted back. There was definitely an obvious force feeding to Deebo happening. It was strange to see because he didn't do that for Ayuk early in the season when he was struggling to get touches. Shanahan has always been committed to running the offense and letting the system get the ball into the hands of playmakers organically. I'm trying to figure out what to make of it because it was so out of character. Throwing screens or handing the ball to a guy is an easy way to get them the ball. But this was beyond that. They featured Deebo in the short, medium, and deep passing game. It's from a quote. That's from a coach. And that quote, that's where it ends. But they featured Deebo Samuel at all levels of the field, and nothing worked. And it burned early possessions to the point where the 49ers should have had a two-possession lead, but they led 3-0, and we all know how that typically works out. If you don't take advantage of your opportunities when the opportunities are there, especially when your defense is running on the fuel of a linebacker who's 305 days removed from an Achilles tear and probably won't play a full snap count, you know that defense is going to have rougher times in the second half. They did. Well, if that's going to be the case, you better build up the lead in the first half, and the 49ers didn't. I mean, it wasn't just the schematics of things, and it wasn't just the Deebo Samuel force feeding. It was the field goal decision from Kyle Shanahan. It was the larger game strategy at the start. 33-yard completion to George Kittle, the only explosive pass of the day for the 49ers, was followed up by three straight runs and a field goal, with that field goal coming on a fourth down from plus territory where, it was a 53-yard field goal, so it was the spot of the field where you analytically should seriously consider going for it. And then not only did the 49ers settle for the field goal, they also ran the ball three straight times before kicking that field goal, which seemed to indicate that they're planning to go for it, but then they didn't. So they never seriously made a push from a strategic standpoint, going for it on fourth down to build the kind of lead that they should have built against the Rams early in that game. It was just bad, bad football all around for the 49ers. Anyway, we talk about Devondre Campbell's betrayal, the 49ers obviously talking about that a lot. One of my main points was, there are people saying, why are people talking so much about Devondre Campbell? It's masking other things that were wrong with the 49ers. And I get it, right? It is taking some attention away from the fact that Deebo Samuel seemed to complain about not getting the football enough after the 49ers put up their highest scoring output of the season. That's problematic in and of itself. And then Deebo Samuel didn't deliver, didn't back up his tweet this week. That would have been the headlining story if not for Devondre Campbell. It is masking some of the talk of the 49ers structural deficiencies offensively, but I've been talking about those every single week. So I don't think that's anything new. But my main point is that when something like the Campbell incident does happen, it should be the headlining news, because such behavior is an existential threat to the 49ers culture. That culture has to be the bedrock, and it has been the bedrock even in a rough season. I think that culture has led to Dre Greenlaw working his ass off to come back as impressively as he did yesterday. It's led to Christian McCaffrey, even after signing his contract, working his ass off to come back, and he did, and he was excelling when he banged his knee in Buffalo against that hard artificial turf on the snowy day. It's led to Talanoa Hufanga fighting tooth and nail to get back on the field. I mean, there have been so many healthy examples of 49ers culture over the course of this season and over the course of the past several seasons. So when something like the Devondre Campbell incident happens that is an existential threat to that, that is the headlining news from the game. That's why Shanahan, Kittle, and others were so angry. But yes, it has overshadowed the other issues. But that's why I'm here to talk forever about this kind of stuff, because I don't overshadow them. I try to bring them all to light. The force feeding of Deebo Samuel, the jarring departure from organically created offense that the 49ers saw just 4 days ago against the Bears. I mean, Shanahan's system is all about distributing the football around the whole field and not zeroing in on one player. But it almost seemed like Brock Purdy was forced to go to Deebo Samuel. He was the first read against Akella Witherspoon on a play that didn't have much of a chance to open the game. There was the handoff on third down that preceded the Jake Moody field goal. There were a couple other runs that went absolutely nowhere. As the coach who texted me just said, it was featuring Deebo in the short, medium, and deep passing game in a way that was completely out of character for the 49ers yesterday. And that's what was wrong with the 49ers beyond the Devondre Campbell situation. But we have to prioritize things when we talk about all that went wrong. And it's really, really hard to sift through the mud after such a disastrous performance. My main point, and I wrote this on social media, is this was a broken offense last night. Just 4 days after it operated as its old, efficient self. That would have been the lead story and a massive one had Devondre Campbell not pulled what he did. Good thing is that we've got a lot of time to talk about absolutely everything. And I will say that also in the big picture, the defense looked a whole lot better. How do the 49ers look better moving forward in 2025? How do they set the table for next season? Well, you know, we're going to talk so much about contractual stuff over the next couple months, and you might as well get as big of a sample size as you can before you make any firm decisions. But I think that it's trending toward them really wanting to bring back Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga. Because if you talk about preserving culture on the football team, if you talk about wanting to set the right tone, both of those guys have A, worked their asses off to get to the point where they can set that tone, and then they have set the tone. Greenlaw was fantastic last night. Very first play back after 305 days was a tackle. 8 tackles in the first half. Talanoa Hufanga has been fantastic over the past 2 weeks. Again, I'm not holding a dropped interception with a club on his hand against him, but the way he's communicated, those two guys have transformed the 49ers defense. And then Nick Bosa obviously thrown into that mix as well. I thought that he played good football last night. But when you look at team building into the offseason, you've got to find who you want to keep in the building. Who's going to be a positive force moving forward? Who's going to be, you know, a pillar to build around? Because the 49ers, so many of the structural pillars right now from a schematic standpoint just aren't there. So you better have the talent pillars to build around. I think Brock Purdy has proven to be that guy. I think the 49ers view it the same way. And Brock, I mean, he's been consistent throughout this year. He's had bad games, just like any great quarterback will have bad games. They believe in him on the offensive side. Who are the guys, especially the ones whose contracts are in question moving forward through pending free agency or whatever, who are the guys they're going to trust on the defensive side of the ball? And I think that Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga, I mean, especially for Greenlaw, because we didn't know exactly what he'd look like in his first game coming off the Achilles, I think they've made major, major cases to be 49ers fixtures moving forward. I think George Kittle has made a big case to be re-signed, even though he's still got a year left on his contract. Then you got somebody like Debo Samuel, and it's been quite the opposite, right? So that's where these decisions are going to have to be made, and that's where the data that the 49ers can collect over the final three games is going to be so interesting. Shanahan alluded a little bit more to this, and we'll go back to the piece up here on the San Francisco Standard. Nick Bosa's quote to end things, followed up on Talanoa Hufanga's locker room speech after the game, where he told the 49ers that the season's not over. They still have got games to play, and they better show up, because it's about showing that fight every day to set a tone for the future. Bosa echoed that, and he said, that's what the message is now, and we're going to find out who wants to be a Niner. And that's how my article ended. I mean, that's such a powerful quote given the Devondre Campbell situation. But it's also really, really fitting in the context of the team building for the 49ers. They have to find out exactly who is cut out for a comeback turnaround season in 2025. And if there's any question about anybody, well, the Devondre Campbell situation is a valuable lesson for the 49ers. You can't have him in the building. I mean, that's the existential threat to a team culture that can help you rebound. Having a down season is okay. It happens in the NFL. This is the most competitive league in the world. It is so difficult to be good year after year after year. Even the 49ers of the 1980s, who won a bunch of Super Bowls, had down seasons. Totally fine. What you can't have is a threat to the team culture that begins to compromise multiple seasons and not just one, because culture carries over from year to year. So if you're the general manager and John Lynch, if you're the coach and Kyle Shanahan, you need to make sure that you're continually fostering a good environment that supports a team to capitalize on the opportunities when they are there. It can be very easily argued that the 49ers never truly had a real opportunity this season because of all that went wrong that was outside of their control. And that's fine. Sometimes it doesn't line up, and sometimes it's more likely to not line up because of the grind that you had to go through and the heartbreak that you had to go through in years before. 60 games in three seasons wore on the 49ers. Super Bowl losses wore on the 49ers. NFC Championship game losses wore on the 49ers. The Brandon Ayuk hold-in wore on the 49ers. I mean, all of this stuff adds up. And there was tragedy, too. I mean, we can never neglect that, right? The off-field tragedy. These are human beings. All of this stuff can add up, and sometimes it's just not your year. So I think people who are analyzing this, people who are fans of this, a lot of people just need to grow up and realize that sometimes it's not your year. But even when it's not your year, you have to make sure that you keep things structurally sound so that you maximize your chances of the next year being your year. And that's why this yesterday is something that angered the 49ers so much. That's why this with Devondre Campbell is treated as an existential crisis for the 49ers. I mean, I wouldn't say crisis. Let me amend my words. An existential threat to the culture. You've got to make sure that this is something that doesn't repeat itself and doesn't infect the rest of the team. That's where San Francisco is right now. And that's why it's the headlining news. We can talk about all the other issues, but we have to address the headlining news because it's the culture of a team that is going to be the bedrock throughout any successful organization. There's going to be things outside of your control anytime in any organization, but you have to control what you can and create an environment that maximizes the chances of success in any given year. And that's the fire that the 49ers have to put out right now, which is why we're talking about what's next for Devondre Campbell. The 49ers, those of you just joining, have said that it's all semantics now. Campbell's no longer going to be part of the team. Now, that still means that a suspension, though, is on the table, which would mean he technically still is a 49er, but he's obviously not going to be suiting up for San Francisco at any point this season. I think that if you look at the suspension path, that would give the 49ers some peace of mind knowing that Devondre Campbell can't possibly sign with a team like the Lions and then stay in line and make the 49ers look really bad because the Lions are obviously going to be in the postseason. The release would obviously give Campbell that potential opportunity. I don't know if the league would be interested in signing him, but the 49ers are rightfully so. They're treading carefully in this situation right now. We got some good stuff from SF Data 49ers. Mike is sending me some stuff. I just checked this out. Brock Purdy by week. Oh, this is really good. I love charts like this. Let's get this up on the screen. All right, here we go. The green is good, red is bad, as normal. SF Data 49ers does an awesome job, or SF Data Niners, you have their handle in the bottom right. But this is weeks 1 through 15 for Brock Purdy. What's so interesting to me is the yak percentage was terrible to start the season, and it has gradually gotten better, which shows that the 49ers have played into rhythm. And, you know, maybe it was the Brandon Ayuk hold-in combined with the Christian McCaffrey absence early on in this season that led to the biggest stylistic departures. But the main thing about this is there's a whole lot of green on here for Brock Purdy. And Brandon Allen is there for week 12. So remember that this is not Purdy right there in week 12 against Green Bay. But Purdy's two least efficient games have come over the past 3 weeks. Now, one was a snow game, so we're not going to make the biggest deal out of the game at Buffalo. But then there was yesterday's game, which was rock bottom for the 49ers offense. They didn't even get to the red zone. What is most maddening to me when I'm trying to analyze things is that this one literally came after Brock Purdy's best game of the season, 4 days after. So, I mean, if there's some, there's something that's emblematic, something that encapsulates this 49ers season, I think it's the performance variation from Sunday to Thursday. You go from a 98.5 percentile EPA performance to one in the 15th percentile for the 49ers. I mean, from extraordinary efficiency to terrible efficiency, from 92nd percentile completion percentage over expectation to second percentile. I mean, the vacillation here was wild. And I don't think that this is possible, especially against a Rams defense that hasn't been good. I don't think it's possible for the 49ers to perform this poorly just because Brock Purdy was a little bit off in one game. I think that it took a systematic breakdown yesterday, and I think that we can point back to the force-feeding of Deebo Samuel early in this game as evidence of the 49ers and Shanahan going awry from the very start. And then, obviously, the Deebo drop was a massively impactful blow to the 49ers in the football game. But just insane to see the performance drop the way that it did 4 days apart for the 49ers, especially since the Rams are not world beaters on defense. Mike, can you toss me a couple questions, please? We'll go through some of the questions and we'll go to a little bit more Brock Purdy perspective here. These are Brock Purdy's. This is Brock Purdy's entire career. Green is good, red is bad. He has an exceptionally low amount of bad games. You could basically toss out this one. This is when his elbow was blown up against the Philadelphia Eagles. But last season, worst game was against the Ravens. This year, a lot of good games, and then two of the last three have been bad. One was obviously in the snow. There were weather issues against the Rams yesterday. I get it, but I don't think that they didn't persist for the whole game. And obviously the offensive issues went well beyond that. But this is a dosage of perspective that I think people really need to take. Is that do not get stuck in the tree. Look at the whole forest. Brock Purdy has been good throughout almost all of his NFL career. He's got more games of a passer rating of over 120 over his first three seasons than any quarterback in NFL history. And to be honest, he might have the fewest games with a negative EPA of any NFL quarterback over his first three seasons. There's been an overwhelmingly large amount of good versus the amount of bad. Right now, Brock Purdy is coming off of a bad performance against the Rams. So when we're talking about 49ers pillars moving forward and the need to tether themselves to something that's working, Brock Purdy has been working. That's fine. It wasn't working last night. Nothing was working for the 49ers offensively last night. But the data on the big picture with all the green that you see here is so, so important to consider. And I think this is what people lose sight of on a game-by-game basis. They'll get way too high after a game against the Bears and way too low after games like the ones that Purdy had against the Bills and the Rams. Now it's up to him to find ways to work with Shanahan to stabilize this moving forward, because what the 49ers have seen over recent weeks has been nowhere near good enough. I get it. Like, I mean, you need more consistency than what the 49ers have put on tape from weeks 11 through 15, but let's not act like Brock Purdy hasn't overcome imperfect situations to deliver elite play, because he has. Imperfect situation in week 6, excellent game. Imperfect situation in week 3, excellent game. Imperfect situation in week 10, excellent game. I don't think the situation was perfect in week 14, excellent game. What the 49ers need is more offensive sustainability, and that's going to have to start with Kyle Shanahan figuring out what the hell is wrong with this offense on a structural level. Yes, the yak, I think this is partially encouraging for the 49ers, that the yak percentages have generally gotten better over the course of the season, but the separation hasn't. Yesterday's average separation was the lowest mark of the season for San Francisco, and they're now dead last, like, alone. They were tied with the Cowboys for the lowest separation at the time of catch. And, you know, missing Brandon Ayuk, there's a reason why they paid him all that money. They feel that they need that X receiver with the explosiveness that Ayuk has. But it can't be a drop from the top half of the league to last just because you're missing one player. The offense needs to have a little bit more injury resilience than Shanahan has built into it. I don't know if that means leaning more on spread wide-out sets against some of the man coverage that the 49ers have faced instead of the bunch formations, or if it's a combination of a bunch of different things. That's all part of the very long, hard self-evaluation that Kyle Shanahan is going to have to make over the course of this offseason. But I think it's very apparent, if we look at things objectively, that the 49ers have a quarterback who's been consistent. Is all you can really ask for in terms of performance in the NFL, and they have to make sure that the structure around him continues to foster consistency. It's as simple as that. And that simplicity has got a lot of complexity underneath it, but sometimes we do need to zoom out and see the forest and not just the trees. What's the issue with the 49ers offense against man coverage? That's one of our questions. Mike is relaying some of the questions to me. Well, the lack of separation has been a big problem. If somebody like Deebo Samuel is at the nexus of your game plan, if he's at the very focal point of your game plan, and he's not a good man coverage separator, that's the beginning of your problem, right? The 49ers are at their best when Deebo Samuel is Deebo Samuel, when he's a screen weapon, when he's the Z receiver, when he's not going to be the first read against man-to-man coverage against the cornerback as he was yesterday. That's why I talk about the force feeding of Deebo Samuel being something that wasn't beneficial to the 49ers offense. So they're not separating. And then obviously when there was some separation, Brock Purdy was inaccurate yesterday. So you kind of have that perfect storm of, okay, this is not a good game plan. Then when Brock Purdy does make a pass, Deebo Samuel drops it. That was a pass that should have been a touchdown. And then later on, when Purdy's trying to make up for that, he missed Ricky Pearsall deep, and then he forced the interception that he shouldn't have thrown, although Shanahan blamed some of that on his own play call toward Juwan Jennings. That was the Darius Williams interception in the end zone. So those are the issues with man coverage. And a lot of them trace back to Brandon Ayuk and the hold-in and the ACL tear. I get it, but I still think that Shanahan has to be better putting his receivers into the positions that they're best at so the 49ers can be more sustainably effective on the offensive side of the ball. When is Trent Williams coming back? He's working to come back, but there is no firm announcement yet. I know that he was ruled out earlier this week, unlike Nick Bosa, who was questionable, and then he actually played. So Williams a little bit behind Bosa. Maybe we see him in Miami. All I do know is the 49ers are intent on saying, if you're healthy, you're playing. They want to set that right tone heading into this offseason. Trent Williams not quite healthy yet at this point. Who wins the West? We'll see how Seattle does against the Green Bay Packers and then against the Minnesota Vikings. I still think it's up for grabs between Seattle, Arizona, and the Rams, with the 49ers having less than a 1% chance at this point. People asking about the offensive line. I think the focus should always be on improving your offensive line. I've been talking about that since 2019. Dominic Pooney was a big upgrade for the 49ers at right guard. We'll see. You know, I thought Jalen Moore struggled a bit more than he had in previous weeks. He ultimately a backup tackle. At some point, there was going to be a reversion to the mean there. We probably saw a little bit of it, including the whole left side getting caved in on the Purdy interception. So, I mean, that's a position where they need Trent Williams back. They paid him all that money because he is one of the best left tackles in the game, and he's going to be a fixture for the 49ers for years to come. But they can still work on center. They can still work on left guard. Aaron Banks is a pending free agent. They can still work on right tackle. Probably harder to work on tackle than other positions because good tackles are in such short supply. Offensive linemen in general on short supply, so it is tough to improve there. I think the 49ers improved a little bit along the offensive line, but they need to improve more moving forward next season. So it's not just one thing, right? You don't have to enter an offseason saying, we're only going to fix this area. You got to find a way to build the most robust and strong roster possible. And that's why football is so fun to cover, because it's such a complex beast. How do you get to a point where you have a true Super Bowl contender that can withstand the rigors of an NFL season? And that's what the 49ers are going to be doing over the course of this year. Is Yetur Gross-Matos on a one-year deal? No, he's on a two-year contract, which is nice. That could be a nice boost for the 49ers moving into the next season, because he really has been playing really, really good football. This show is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. And switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/LombardiLounge today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LombardiLounge. Also, while you're here, since we were talking about Devondre Campbell to open the show, and I read a little bit from the article, go ahead and check it out. This article is in the description of the YouTube video, and you could sign up for the San Francisco Standard. Membership's open now. I wrote a very deep piece about 49ers culture, the anger in the locker room yesterday, and I think that talking about this and analyzing this right now is more important than ever as the 49ers try to pick up the pieces from this 2024 season, maintain the culture that has made them a successful team over the years, and try to reload for 2025. It's all part of the larger team building strategy, and a membership there for the San Francisco Standard will have you ready for this offseason. So check that out. It is in the description of the YouTube. You can sign up for the membership through that link. All right, there's your 49ers update. 49ers working through the semantics with Devondre Campbell. Release or suspension are possible. I'll keep you updated from those. Good news is that Dre Greenlaw, although he was really sore, limping a bit after the game, he did come out okay from the game. He's got about 10 days to get his body ready for the game against Miami. Jair Brown and D. Winters are day to day. We talk about Brock Purdy's demonstrated performance floor and ceiling. The floor is number 9 QBR. He had not performed lower than number 9 in his career, even with yesterday's game included. And the ceiling is number 1 QBR. 49ers have a fixture at the quarterback position. They aren't worried about Brock Purdy despite a bad game. I'm here to tell you about the forest. I'm not emotionally looking at one tree. That is how you objectively analyze Purdy. And the way to objectively analyze the game is that the defense actually looked pretty damn good. Minus the fact that Devondre Campbell quit on his team. That hurt everybody. And the offense was atrocious yesterday. Structurally, the 49ers have been languishing. Shanahan has been languishing all season. And that's what the 49ers need to fix. I'm not here to tell you news that's going to make you feel better. I think that the fixes for the 49ers are much more general, which is problematic because the problems reach deeper than people want them to reach. It's not as easy to simplify as just yelling about Brock Purdy or yelling about the quarterback. It's going to take a whole long, big, overarching look at the entire system for the 49ers to get back to where they want to be consistently. Good news is that they showed that they still have the capability of delivering very, very efficient play just 4 days ago, 5 days ago now against Chicago. Bad news is that consistency has not been there. And when the consistency isn't there, a look at the structure is needed. We'll continue doing that in very objective, critical terms moving forward. Everybody, thanks for watching. We will talk to you very, very soon.